Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is time. Ohio State, Oregon, the rematch. And this is all about vibes. Where's your vibe at with this game?
It's not high. And I feel like I might be the only person on the planet that is not high. There's something about the Tennessee game that just remains. It's not fraudulent. That's not what I'm trying to say. The idea that Tennessee is anything more than just a mid. They're what, the third, fourth best team? I guess it's more than mid. But like, they're just not a great SEC team. And I just watched Alabama just get run out of the building by Michigan. I think the SEC is down this year. I'm not impressed with a lot of what the SEC is doing. And I have a hard time thinking that it was anything more than the stars aligning. In a game that Tennessee, by the way, didn't have the, you know, SEC Offensive Player of the Year in Samson.
Yeah, I mean, I think Oregon as an undefeated team could be classified as fraudulent. They're a really good team, but they're not. You know, it does feel like every year we have some unbeaten team, and sometimes you look at them and go, how can anyone beat that team? Georgia's been that team. Clemson's been that team. Alabama's been that team. Yeah. Ohio State's been that team. That's not what this Oregon team is. They're a really, really, really good team.
I mean, they got the best regular season out of anybody.
But if you take away the records, Ohio State and Oregon, I think, are very similar teams in terms of the upside of talent. Yeah. So, and by the way, I think you can say that the defense, there's a better defense Ohio State has now than, or at least stylistically, it's different.
For sure.
Than that first game. I think that really does. If that was a one-point game then and the defense is better or stylistically better, yeah, I think you, I like.
Yeah.
The secondary, Nick,
hasn't given up a touchdown since that Oregon game.
I just feel like, I feel more confident going into this game that it's going to be a really good game than I had any level of any kind of feel for the Tennessee game. I didn't see them smoking Tennessee that way.
I mean, where I'm battling here, though, is I'm battling with the idea that I think Ohio State's got a lot of talent. I know Ohio State has a lot of talent. I think I've made jokes about Dylan Gabriel. Like, you can't be an Oompa Loompa and be my quarterback, okay? You must be this tall to ride the ride.
What'd you call him? Discount Tua?
Welfare Tua,
Say it with such bravado. That's like the take is good, but then you sell it in such a way. The little extra English you put on it really is where it becomes one of my favorite takes you have. Well, whether I agree or not is not the point.
But the problem, though, is that he had so much time in that first matchup. He just had so much time. And he got few pressures. He wasn't even sacked once. He just had so much time.
He's proof if you do 8 years in college, eventually you'll have great year or two.
Nick, he's 24 years old.
Yeah, he's a grown man.
Isn't he? He's gonna be older than. Is he older than Joe Burrow?
I heard he's actually a grandfather. Baby's not here yet, but
it's
will.
On the way.
Yeah, by the time he gets to the NFL next year,
he will be a grandfather. Had the code year. It's one of those weird things with him. I can't buy into him. I know he's not an NFL player. I know that. With certainty, I know that.
By the way, just as a quick sidebar, everybody realizes because we have 26-year-old quarterbacks in college that's why the parity in college is off the charts, right?
It's not the transfers?
But that's a point. Is like, you know, Dylan Gabriel's on school number three, and he's a grown ass man. We have grown ass men playing quarterback in the NFL, playing 6, 7, 8 years. Yeah, sure, make fun of the Utah kid for going on 8 years. There's like 3 or 4 kids that 8, 9 years deep. The kid from the tight end from Miami that just retired after 9 years in college. Make fun of it. Be outrageous as you want. That's part of the reason why, like, quarterback play is at an all-time high in terms of just good quarterbacks in college football, because they've been around since the 1700s.
Yeah, and someone like Dylan Gabriel is going to make more money at Oregon than he is going to be in a third round, or not third round, excuse me, day three pick in the NFL.
If right now I'm doing the McCord. I'm trying to find how can I turn this into a second year at Oregon and a seven figure payday?
Yeah.
Because it's why McCord. Like, McCord probably could be a fourth rounder. Like, I don't love his lack of mobility. I still think he's massively overrated as a player. But I think in this draft class, yeah. I mean, I think McCord and Ewers are probably in the same category of they're going to get pushed up the draft boards. And yet, Kyle McCord can make more money playing another year at Syracuse than he can be on that first rookie deal in the NFL.
Yeah, the dynamics of college football has changed so much just in that conversation.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to me.
And again, in that case, it's good for the NFL. But specific to this, like, I don't know. I think there's a world in where, to some degree, Ryan Day is coaching for his job tomorrow, whether it's out there and everybody knows it or not.
For sure he is. Like, he's got to be,
well,
right?
And it's not necessarily win or lose. It's about how does it look. Like, if you lose the same way you lost, where it's just it's one play.
I don't know. I do think it can be as simple as win or lose.
Ooh, no. No, because I think
he can lose. I'm thinking more about the winning part of this. Like, if he wins, then he makes it to the third round. And I think Bjork just has so much invested in him financially and everything. And the recruiting class has been really good. I think if he wins, I think that'll be enough.
Here's the thing. I specific to this game. Because also, if Oregon goes on and wins a national championship, and you were, it's the Georgia thing, right? You were one field goal kick away from beating Georgia. You beat that Georgia team. You win the national title. That was the national championship game.
Yeah.
I think some people view it that way.
People definitely do.
I have said, I think Ross Bjork is a haircut. I think he is there to get in a room. I do. I think he's there to be really good looking and raise money. I think he knows where his bread is buttered, and it's not hiring coaches. So I think because he is a fundraiser, his decision, it's not just about win or lose. How it looks does matter, because I think Bjork is smart enough to know if the money's still flowing in, don't fire the guy. But if people start pulling their money, if it's an embarrassing loss, that's the scenario where all of a sudden I do think Ryan Day. To me, it's just don't get blown out.
I don't think a blowout is on the table, because if you look at, they played three different playoff teams, right? They played Boise State. Boise State put 30 on him. That's the game that Gentee went for 200 yards and three touchdowns we discussed earlier. Ohio State put up 30 as well. And the Penn State game, Penn State also got to 30 as well. Now, they ran like crazy. I think they had like 300 yards on the ground too. And that's the interesting part about this game to me, Nick. You're going to be able to score, but will it turn into a Will Howard versus Dylan Gabriel shootout, or are they going to go back to what they were doing prior to the Tennessee game, and they're going to try to do the mix of pass and run, and you're going to have Judkins, and you're going to have Henderson in there, and you're going to have a run game, which is something that they just completely shied away from the Tennessee game.
I think you have to keep it through the air, because I think your explosive plays are the way you win not just this game, but a national championship. But I think the difference is, I can't remember which guest it was before the Tennessee game. I think it was Neuheisel. Neuheisel said they're going to pass so they can run. And there were a couple people mocking that on social media. And I was like, no, that's the way this needs to be set up. You don't have a great offensive line, either in pass pro or in run pro. So the simplest way to take pressure off that O-line and get that running game going is Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Ogbuka. That really is. Like, if you don't have, and because here's the thing, Judkins and Henderson, they've been really good this year. Behind the next level offensive line, their numbers would be twice as good as they are.
Yeah,
they're fine, but they're both tremendous. Like, we're talking great college football and probably NFL running backs that have, honestly, their performance has been hampered to some degree by a bad offensive line or an inconsistent offensive line. So to me, like, I still expect 60% passes to 40% runs. But I think you got to establish the pass early to open up the run and just pry open that Oregon defense. So all of a sudden, instead of Quinshon running into an 8-man box, a 7-man box, they're both him and Travion are running into lighter boxes.
Yeah, I mean, I just look at like the Penn State Oregon game, for instance. Oregon was up at the half by a big number, right?
Yeah.
And they still, Penn State was still running the ball. What are you laughing at?
Inside joke. Tell you off air.
I missed it.
It's okay. 216.
Penn State ran the ball 34 times. Drew Aller, your guy, threw the ball 39 times.
That was really good football analysis, by the way. Don't let that, don't let my immaturity and my smirking get in the way of your good analysis. It's really good analysis.
I want to be in on the joke.
I can't really retell the joke on air because then all of a sudden I can't get away with it being a sly joke that I made on the sly.
Did we go to nitty gritty football?
No, it was perfect. It was not about you.
It felt nitty gritty.
Me being immature. Now,
okay.
We're talking about whether
Ryan
Day. Are
you talking downtown?
All the way downtown. So while we're talking about Ryan Day coaching for his job, Ian Rappaport on the NFL Network went into the Browns' decision to let Mike Vrabel out of his contract 6 days earlier than need be, and it's not all about the pro game.
Mike Vrabel's consulting contract with the Cleveland Browns, that expired today. But the timing is significant here as well. Mike Vrabel has been linked to the Ohio State job, which is not open. Ryan Day is still the head coach at Ohio State, but they play on Wednesday. If something really terrible happens and they decided to make a change, wouldn't be surprised to see Ohio State take a look at Vrabel as well.
All right, first on the market on this one.
Yeah, how about you got?
Mike Vrabel, under no circumstances, is going to Ohio State, but his agent knows that the best thing you can have is leverage, and the Ohio State job has every bit from the outside of a real dangerous threat to Mike Vrabel and might make somebody jump on Mike Vrabel a little bit quicker.
So I don't think he's going, but I do think it's interesting that yesterday we had a discussion about how bad the NFL openings are.
Mm-hmm.
How there's not one that's great. If the Patriots job becomes open, I do think that'd be really appetizing to him. Number one overall pick, you got the franchise quarterback. There's a lot there. He's in the Patriots Hall of Fame. There's a lot there. I still think the Bears job is good, but I think the Bears are leaning Ben Johnson at this point. I don't know that Vrabel's going to win that one out. And outside of that, I mean, they all kind of stink. Like, yeah. like Breer was on at 3 o'clock. He's like, oh yeah, he might go with Brady and the Raiders. What?
Yeah, the worst NFL job is better than the best college job right now. Like if Mike Vrabel hated college football a decade ago.
I know, but it's changed though.
It's not changed in the better. No, it hasn't changed for a guy like that.
Boomeranging in a different direction. Like the reason why Saban and all these guys left is because they didn't want to do the recruiting and also do the transfer and deal with all that stuff. Belichick's never going to go in these houses. Belichick's not hitting the pavement. He's not doing any recruiting.
Yeah, but he's still going to have to hit that text at 3 a.m. You up, King?
Yeah, that's
like
fine.
By the way, that's so much worse.
I can do that from a comfy couch.
Yeah, no. That's much more work.
300 miles every weekend.
Traveling.
The traveling would stink.
I shouldn't say it's more work, but it's as much work as those two things. If Belichick went, I guess I can't just say he definitively won't go back to college. And Columbus, I know, has some special allure. We've had Bobby Carpenter on.
He was very adamant.
Said definitively, he sold his house. He's not going back. He has no interest in it. And I'm going to take his word on that. And I really do think, like, I think this is a case of Mike Vrabel's agent knowing that if you say the difference between Mike Vrabel going to Chicago and New England, all right, and maybe that's not going to motivate a team. There might not be the same fear of loss, right? Because you can just say, well, we think we have the better job. If home is calling, it is the ultimate leverage play. I just think it's plain as day.
I don't know.
The fact that Rappaport and Schefter carry more water for NFL agents
sure.
than anybody in the history of water or agents. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say this is a leverage play.
You might be right. And I still think it takes a million dominoes for it to fall any other way. But I think the fact that we all know these NFL jobs right now, it's not great.
So Ben Johnson to Chicago is the domino.
You need Ben Johnson to Chicago. Okay. Then you also need Ryan Day to lose tomorrow.
Okay, and Gerard Mayo to keep his job.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's a lot of things.
All right. Is there a fourth domino, or are those the only three dominoes?
Those are three pretty big dominoes.
Well, yeah, one of them's feasible. One of them could happen, but I think the way it looks matters. I mean,
you've done a lot of three-team parlays with FanDuel. You know those are hard to hit.
Everybody knows Nikki Dubs and
you got some
three ways.
Plus like 650 on
these
odds.
That's just the way she
goes. Plus 750.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where we're at. Talking downtown.
What you say at that time.
216-474-0092. Is Mike Vrabel using Ohio State as leverage? Because here's the thing. Why it does matter is this report is the kind of thing that could make Ohio State go, well, we lost by a touchdown. The fan, you know, Ross Bjork, oh, they're starting to pull their money. All right, we're going to go get Vrabel. Problem is, Vrabel's not going to talk to you about that job with Ryan Day in it. And then when you fire Ryan Day, if it turns out Mike Vrabel was just using you as leverage, you could be in the ultimate worst situation, which is not getting, I think, the only guy you might be able to sell as a definitive upgrade or move in the right direction. Everybody else might be a good hire, but you need definitive. If you're going to move on from a guy with that.
It would be an absolute disaster. If they fired Ryan Day and then weren't able to land Vrabel.
Which is exactly what happens when you fire a guy, no matter what I think of Ryan Day. And you know, after the Michigan loss, this last one, I was like, I got no more defense of that guy. That being said, this is the kind of thing that happens when you fire a guy with that much success. Whether we think he could do better or not. Dave Biddle, editor of Bucknuts on 24/7. We're going to talk Ohio State, Oregon tomorrow, New Year's Day, 5 p.m. kickoff, the Rose Bowl. Dave, next on 92.3 The Fan. Nick and JP back on Afternoon Drive. We got plenty to get to, but Ohio State, Oregon, 5 p.m. tomorrow at the Rose Bowl. This one has absolute national championship implications for both teams. The winner probably going to be seen as the favorite to go on and win the national champion, and it could be boom or bust for Ohio State, especially with Ryan Day. And now we're going to welcome on a man who's watched this team all season long, the ups, the downs, and everything in between. So we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline and welcome on the editor of Bucknuts on 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports Network, the great Dave Biddle joins us. Dave, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I appreciate that. You know, a little too much on the intro there, but I appreciate it.
I always try and butter people up because then I like to ask direct questions. And if I don't butter them up at the beginning, they just get pissed when I ask them direct questions. Like, athletes are always surprised when we ask them like a tough question. And so, and by the way, it doesn't always work, but it occasionally works, and I'm going with those numbers.
I like it. I might use your strategy there. I like that.
So I guess we can get to this Ohio State Oregon game since everyone's talking about it. I am curious about your take on Ohio State and how much different of a team they are now than the team that played Oregon and lost a close game. What is that? Two and a half months ago.
Yeah, this is a hard team to figure out because they've had moments where they look like the team we expected them to look. And then they've had just moments where it's head scratching, and not just the Michigan game, which is obviously the most glaring example, but even against Nebraska, an average Nebraska team was leading Ohio State here in Columbus in the fourth quarter. So, and Ohio State won that game, but they just haven't looked like the team that anybody expected until the Tennessee game. And, you know, we'll see how that can carry over to tomorrow night, tomorrow evening. But this is a great Oregon team. This is a hard Ohio State team to figure out, but I feel like they now have confidence. But this is a heck of an Oregon team on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with a lot of this game. But one angle in particular is defensively how they stopped Dylan Gabriel, because it feels like Ohio State's defense, it's night and day from the first time they allowed almost 500 total yards against that Oregon offense. And I don't know what you make of the changes defensively, whether you think that will actually be able to stop Gabriel, but there's a lot to it.
There really is. And they mentioned after the Oregon game, they said, you know, Ryan Day said this, we're going to re-engineer. We are re-engineering our defense. And, you know, you're thinking, okay, what does that even mean? Now I think what that means is Jim Knowles has complete control over the defense. Like, what took so long? This is third year's defensive coordinator. It took 2.5 years. I think it did because it seemed like there was some disconnect between what the back seven was doing for Ohio State and what the front four was doing. Larry Johnson kind of had veto power over what was going on with the defensive line, in my opinion. Now when you look at Ohio State since the Oregon game on defense, it looks like schematically exactly what Jim Knowles did when he was at Oklahoma State. But it's with Ohio State's players, so they're, you know, five stars instead of three stars. And he turned Oklahoma State into one of the top five defenses in the country. So we're seeing Knowles' fingerprints are all over this defense now. They've done a better job of pressuring quarterbacks. They've done a better job of getting sacks. And you're right. I mean, the biggest storyline in the first game, as far as Ohio State's defense was concerned, twofold was, and these are really intertwined, not getting pressure on Gabriel at all. I think he was comfortable the entire game. They'd have to make him uncomfortable, and giving up big plays. So, you know, if they can pressure Gabriel, if they can limit big plays, this could be a good afternoon slash evening for the Buckeyes. If they don't, it could be another long game against the Ducks for the Buckeyes.
Dave Biddle of BuckNuts.com on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So I know there's more to get into with this game, but big picture, given the loss to Michigan, given you have another loss, obviously the first one to Oregon there, does the success, to truly label this season a success, does that all ride on this game?
I think it does. I think if they, you know, if they had beaten Michigan and they won the Big Ten, but they fell short in the playoff, I think everybody'd be like, all right, well, you know, yeah, it was, some people said national championship or bust. I'm never a national championship or bust guy because so much has to go your way. But like, they were clear that they had three goals, you know, beat Michigan, win the Big Ten, win the national championship. Well, now two of those are out the window. So I do think they have to at least get to the semifinals. For Buckeye fans, let's say they go out there and get their butt kicked tomorrow night. They're going to, what are Buckeye fans going to remember? They're going to think the Tennessee game was the aberration. They're going to remember the Michigan debacle, and they're going to remember the Oregon game, assuming that goes bad. But if Ohio State wins this game, all is good. They're already, according to some sites, tied to be the betting favorite to win the national championship right now, or they're second right around there. If they win tomorrow, they'll clearly be the betting favorite to win the national championship. So it's so weird, man. It could be a failure of the season if they lose, or if they win, they could win two more games, win the national championship, and people will remember the Michigan game as a blip on the radar. Maybe that woke them up, because obviously you would always take a national championship a million times out of a million over a win over Michigan, because national championship banners hang forever. But it's going to be tough. This Oregon team's going to come ready to play, man. They're physical on both sides of the ball, and they've got the speed that we're used to from an Oregon team. I will say for Ohio State, at least they've played them already and played them very tight. They know what they're getting into. And if you're Ohio State, you're thinking, well, we went to their place at night. Really should have won the game, in their opinion. For Oregon thinks that, you know the right team won. But you're thinking, we went to their place at night, raucous environment, only lost by one. So I think we're in for a heck of a quarterfinal tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, going back to that first Oregon game, Jeremiah Smith was awesome, the same way he was awesome in the Tennessee game. It's interesting, you know, you think about the Michigan game, and it was like, well, what happened to Jeremiah Smith? The offense for him just kind of, it kind of disappeared, and then they got back to the right form in Tennessee. Are we going to see more of what you saw in the Oregon game, or is because of the fact that that Penn State had such an easy time on the ground against Oregon in the Big Ten title game, will they go back to more Judkins and more Travion and move that route?
I think they're going to lean on the passing game. They've been a very balanced offense this year, but they feel like they've got a pretty good matchup advantage. I mean, Oregon's secondary is good, but if you look at them, they're all smallest guys. They're good, though. They're a very good secondary, but their tallest starting defensive back is 5'11". The other four, they start 5 DBs. The other four are all 5'10". And you look at Ohio State, Jeremiah Smith, 6'3", 6'4", Carnell Tate, 6'2", 6'3", right around there. Mecca Buka, 6'1", but tough as nails, 205. They feel like they can get some, you know, and they did in the first game. I mean, Ohio State threw for 326 yards in the first game against Oregon, so they think they can get some damage done there. They know they have to be balanced, and that's a great point. I mean, I think that gives Ohio State confidence. They see that they were able to really limit Penn State's running game to an extent in Happy Valley, whereas Oregon gave up 300 yards of rushing to that same Penn State team in the Big Ten championship game. So, but Oregon is getting Jordan Birch back, which he didn't play in the first game against Ohio State. So, yeah, man, they have to be balanced. They have to run the ball. But I think the biggest advantage is you have Jeremiah Smith, you have Emeka Buka, you have Carnell Tate against a smallish secondary. You know, use that to your advantage, and maybe don't get a offensive pass interference when the game's on the line.
Dave, looking at Will Howard, he was part of a big reason why he lost the Michigan game, and yet the man threw the ball over the yard against Tennessee, and so he's a part of a huge playoff win. What do they need out of Will Howard, and is this game about Will Howard playing flawless and just simply not turning the ball over?
He just has to play well. He's never going to play flawless. Even in his best game of the season against Tennessee, he had an interception. Now, that really wasn't his fault. But, like, we all joke, like, Will is really good, but he's good for, like, one or two, like, boneheaded things per game. So I definitely expect one or two boneheaded things that he will do. But I think if he overall plays well, I think Ohio State is going to be in really good position to win this game. What he can't do is do what he did in the Michigan game, where he's really not making plays. You got to give Michigan credit. I mean, they maybe he shouldn't even went back in the game. I mean, they knocked him silly there for a minute. Although his touchdown pass came after that, so who knows? But yeah, he doesn't need to play perfect, but he needs to keep them on schedule. He needs to move the chains. Third downs are going to be huge. Limit the boneheaded plays that I'm talking about. If it's one or two, okay, Ohio State can live with that. If it's three or four, that could change the game. So, you know, make more good plays than bad. Keep the chains moving. And I think, as they did against Tennessee, they're going to mix in a little bit more of a Q run than we've seen this year. Will had five carries for 37 yards against Tennessee. Not a lot, but that's still, you know, I think that was his most effective rushing game of the season. He's not going to major in running the football, but he can do some damage there. So, yeah, he has to play well for the Buckeyes to win this game, but he doesn't need to be perfect.
Will Howard said that Ryan Day had looped the team's regular season loss to Oregon on all the televisions inside the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. That seems kind of cruel, is all it seems like. I don't know if that's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I like stuff like that. Like, I think, who knows if it's going to work, but, like, why not try it? You guys are going through there, like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then they see that there, that kind of pisses them off. Like, yeah, so we just would have done this. You think about it, one point. And if we just would have done this, we would have won. If we just would have done this, we would have won. So I like stuff like that.
Dave, Ian Rappaport earlier today had said, as part of the Mike Vrabel story of his consultancy with the Browns wrapping up one week early, that not only does that give Vrabel an advantage on the NFL coaching market, but that Vrabel's future could be dictated by what happens tomorrow in this Ohio State-Oregon matchup. Do you think that Mike Vrabel or his agent is using Ohio State as leverage in the NFL, or do you think Mike Vrabel could absolutely have a future in Columbus as a head coach if things go south tomorrow for Ohio State?
I would lean more toward leverage. I think you make a good point there. Now, I did initially think there was no chance that Vrabel had any interest in the Ohio State job because of NIL and all the sea changes we've seen in college football. He's the type of guy that is not going to be down with that stuff. But then I had, you know, somebody I trust very much said, hey, keep an eye on this. Like, if they lose to Tennessee, Ohio State, this could be in play. He's at least going to listen. But they didn't lose to Tennessee. So I don't think, unless it goes really bad tomorrow night, I don't think that Ross Bjork's going to fire Ryan Day. And I think Mike Vrabel is going to be the hottest name on, you know, the coaching circuit, especially now with Bill Belichick taking the North Carolina job. I thought for sure Belichick would come back and be in the NFL this year. So Vrabel is going to be a hot commodity in the NFL circle. So, yeah, I think probably at this point I would say if they're floating that out there, probably his agent trying to increase the value. Although we'll say you probably don't even need to do that because there's going to be probably five or six suitors for Mike Vrabel.
Dave, back to the college football playoff for a second here. With the setup of Oregon taking on Ohio State and what many believe, and I think you even said at one point in this interview, the two best teams in the entire bracket, do you hate how the setup was this year? Or is this the type of thing, it's year one, we'll get it ironed out?
Both. I don't like it at all, and they'll get it ironed out. And it's funny, like, the example I used during the offseason, I was like, having the four buys the way they're doing it we could be setting ourselves up for like ridiculousness. Now, I didn't expect this much ridiculousness, but the example I gave was like, how about the Big 12 champ? Let's say Utah backs their way into the Big 12 championship game. They're 9-3. They back their way in. There's some other 9-3 teams, but they win the tiebreak. But they win the Big 12 championship game. They're 10-3. They're going to get a first-round bye over, let's say, 12-1 Oregon was the example I used. Let's say Oregon beats Ohio State in the regular season, loses to Ohio State in the Big 10 championship game. Utah at 10-3 would be, you know, seated ahead of Oregon and get a bye. So that wasn't exactly how it played out, but, you know, the point remains. It's ridiculous how they set that up. They overthought it. They should have just made whoever is the top four teams. This is the committee's opinion. Whoever you think is the top four teams, those should be the top four seeds. They overthought it. So, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's fun, I guess. But maybe it's not fun playing Oregon in the quarterfinals. But I have no doubt they're going to adjust how they do this. I think they're locked in next year how they have to do it. But, like, starting in 2026, I think they'll definitely adjust how they do it.
Dave, I know we've spent a lot of time focusing on moving forward with Ohio State. But I saw you tweet about this during the Tennessee game. I'm so confused at why everybody said Volunteers fans overtook the horseshoe as if there were more Tennessee fans there than Ohio State fans. I'm curious, can you speak to that? whether that was maybe an embellishment on TV, because it didn't look like Ohio State fans were outnumbered during that first round matchup.
Yeah, Ohio State fans definitely were not outnumbered. It was, you know, depending on who you talk to, I mean, I looked at it, I thought it was 75-25 Ohio State. Being very kind to Tennessee, you could say 70-30. Some have said it 80-20 Ohio State. Regardless, I will give the Vols credit because of all my time watching Ohio State games for even before I was on the beat, just being a fan growing up around here, that's the most visiting fans I've ever been in Ohio Stadium. So whether it was 25%, 30%, 20%, give them credit. But I think they thought that they were at least going to be half and half because that's what the Neyland Stadium North ridiculousness came in, and it was like, okay, sure. Let's see about that. But I think that fired up Ohio State even more. Even though Ohio State was a 7-point favorite in that game, they had an underdog mentality, and that fueled it for sure. But, yeah, I mean, like, it was 70-30 at best, Ohio State, Tennessee. And, I think all that talk, I think that just fueled the fire for the Buckeyes.
Dave, great stuff as always. Real quick before you go, can we get like a 15-second prediction on this game?
Yeah, I think we're headed for a good one. I'm going to give Ohio State the edge. I won't be surprised what happens. I picked Ohio State 31-24 over Oregon. I think we're headed for a great one, guys.
I think we'll take it. Dave, Happy New Year, buddy. Thanks for everything. And go Bucks.
Happy New Year. Appreciate it very much.
Editor of Buck Nuts on 24/7, Dave Biddle on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We're going to react to his thoughts on Ohio State and Oregon at the Rose Bowl tomorrow on 92.3 The Fan.
What are you laughing about over there, friendo?
You're a ridiculous human is what I'm laughing at.
That at which part?
There's been like 7 different breaks we've come back from, and you just find ways to insert your you-ness into it. And then right before, great transition, Buck Nuts and Dave Biddle. Okay, great.
I don't know what you're talking about there, friendo.
No.
We just talked to the great Dave Biddle, and it gave some thoughts. He seems a little bit more confident about Ohio State.
Everyone seems so much more confident. It's blowing my mind.
I think it's you.
How come beating Tennessee? Where's the confidence in beating Tennessee?
Because they didn't just beat Tennessee. They beat them into submission. That's a good SEC team, which, again,
SEC is now very down after that Alabama loss, by the way.
Well, yeah,
checked the conversation.
But that's about Alabama and Georgia. That's not about Tennessee. Like, Tennessee remains the third or fourth best team in the SEC. That's still probably better than the third or fourth best team in the Big Ten.
Ohio State fans getting back to being this confident, though, this quickly after the Michigan loss is quite the surprise.
Right. Like, anything to do with the actual game, or is it just how confident everyone actually is?
Just everyone's so confident. If you beat Oregon, then I could see you guys starting to be confident again and being like, all right, this is the team we always thought we were. Hey, we just played down to Michigan. We fell into Michigan's trap of playing the game that they wanted to play and all these other narratives. It's fascinating to me that just one beatdown of Tennessee and everything is all great now.
Well, it's not just one beatdown of Tennessee. It's also the fact that you played whistle-to-whistle with this team back in October. The fact that outside of Oregon and Michigan, none of those games, none of the other games were really that close at all. Most of them were blowouts. I mean, I think, and by the way, those two losses, they should at most be a one-loss team. They probably should have beaten Oregon, although that's maybe not fair to say. Oregon's a great team. But you can make a case that they should have beaten Oregon, and they damn sure should have beaten Michigan.
Listen, I have confidence that they'll be much, much better than they were against Dylan Gabriel, because there's only one thing to be, which is better than they were the first time against Dylan Gabriel. I'm shocked that at this point entering the game, and maybe I'm just not reading it right, Nick. I don't know. I look at this game as if it's going to be probably a shootout, and I would think it'd be very, very close like the last one.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of vibes from Ohio State fans that tell me otherwise.
Shouldn't you be confident about that? I mean, after the Michigan game, I was done. I was like, this team can't do it.
I know.
This team can't beat a 7-win team.
And that bounce back, that dead cat bounce back that they're having is incredible to me.
Well, because with the Tennessee game and the first Oregon game and the Penn State game and every other game, the Michigan game right now looks like the outlier. It's not great that that's the outlier, but that is what it looks like right now. And listen, I'm not confident Ohio State's going to run away with this thing. Am I confident this is going to be a great game? Yeah. This might end up being the best game in the entirety of the college football playoffs, given the way this thing is seeded and the way all these matchups are going to fall.
Well, that's just the disappointing part for college football fans. It feels like this is the creme de la creme. Like, this is it, and we got it in the second round.
Well, but in fairness, I mean, how many times...
We don't want it to be the very best game in the second round.
But you know what? At the same point, we've had this countless times where we've gone into semifinal matchups in the 14 playoff thinking that was the national championship game. See Georgia, Ohio State from 4 years ago.
For sure. Sometimes it just breaks that way. But to get it in the second round, I feel like is a very disappointing thing for a lot of college football fans.
Actually, but for Ohio State fans specifically, if you win this game... Expect to win a national championship, right?
And that is the expectation for a lot of fans, for sure.
By the way, I don't think it should. I think that's for the media, too. I think it's a logical thing. If you can beat the only unbeaten team.
I think Ohio State fans are getting one step ahead of themselves there, too, because it's not like Texas is just going to roll over and die.
Yeah.
Texas is a good team. You make an argument Texas is the third best team in the whole entire thing, and you take them on after Oregon, but everyone is coming up with that same narrative that you just displayed right there. It's like, oh, win this game, and the winner takes the whole ship.
Yeah, but
and
I don't think anybody expects it to be easy, but I still think that's the expectation. I think people expect Ohio State to win. They just don't expect it to be a wash. It's not going to be Tennessee 2.0. And by the way, I do think it's natural that if you dust a team like they dusted them 42-17 Tennessee in the first round, I think it's natural that you have the pendulum swing maybe too far and back the other direction. I think that's almost common sense that some fans would have that reaction. Not why I have it. That's just a big picture thing after 13 games.
I think that's why Ryan Day spent the previous 2 weeks playing footage of them losing to Oregon in their weight room and in the locker room.
No, I think that's because Ryan Day's a bit of a weird knob sometimes.
Is that it?
No, I don't know. That's not the strength. Like, his motivation powers to me are not the thing that gets you where you're going to go. Like, if Ryan Day, ooh, I'm playing mind games
college football love this stuff.
Yeah, no, they do.
They do. They love this stuff.
But sometimes when guys do it, it doesn't play well. That actually is my only concern, is that Ryan Day's doing his weird hype-up thing. It didn't work leading up to the Michigan game. Hey, this one's outside of my dad passing away. This is the second most important one. That's how much it impacts me. Then 2 weeks later, he's saying it's just one game.
Meanwhile, the quarterback in Will Howard is saying he's had nightmares about this Oregon game. Between the two of them, Will Howard and Ryan Day, they're both goobers.
Yeah, I'll give you the thing about Will Howard. Him saying, we haven't lost, we haven't been beaten, we've only beaten ourselves, that's not the case of the Oregon game. No. The Michigan game, yeah, you beat yourself in the Michigan game. You played yourself. Congrats. That's not what happened in the Oregon game. That was a great game.
Yeah, he might feel like if he slid at the proper time, they were in position to win. Maybe that's how he looks at it. I don't know.
It's so funny when we boil a game like that down to one moment, because there were seven other moments. Maybe you put another seven. You put seven on the board instead of three. Maybe all of a sudden it doesn't come down to a slide.
Yeah, the Jeremiah Smith pass interference call as well, though. There's a couple reasons why if you really wanted to make that sentiment, I could see Will Howard doing it. He'd be wrong, but I could see how he would do it in his head.
216-474-0092.
So you're pretty confident then?
Confident's going to be competitive. I'm not confident they're going to run away with the damn thing.
Okay, well, I think it's going to be competitive as well. I'm not nearly as confident as what I feel like the majority of Ohio State's fan base is.
But if I think we're all saying very similar things. I'm saying I'm confident that this is going to be really competitive, and I think there's a really good chance they win. Like, that's the you're saying you think it's going to be confident. You just are leaning towards them losing. I don't think that's a wide gap. I think we're within a yard line of each other.
Well, we're expecting a good game at least. The shock for both of us would be if Oregon blows out Ohio State or if Ohio State just blows out Oregon.
I think it'd be more. I will say, if you're the college, what do you think would be a better result if you're the college football power brokers?
Yeah.
In a blowout. Is it better for you if Ohio State blows out Oregon, or is it better if Oregon blows out Ohio State?
It's Ohio State blowing out Oregon.
Why?
Because they are one of the big powers. Oregon's very, very good. They're not perceived the same way as Ohio State. It's always better business for Ohio State to be on the better end of that.
Now, how long does it take for somebody to be a blue blood? Because Oregon's been elite.
They don't have a national title.
For most of my back to Pilates.
Joey Harrington, Marcus Mariota, they've had little stretches there where you're like, Oregon's one of the best teams in the game. They have zero national titles, though. They've played in national championships, but zero national titles. Like, you need
a
couple to enter the conversation.
Because they've got two national titles, right?
I think.
Is it just a national title?
I don't know that Tennessee's considered that.
Didn't South Carolina have a national title?
Yeah, I don't think they're considered that either, though.
Okay, that's fair. South Carolina isn't.
Just because you have one doesn't mean you are one.
Is it a recent one?
But I think in order.
Like a last 25 years, you got to have won one?
Yeah, but I think there's a lot more that goes into that, right?
So it's like Notre Dame not
won? Notre Dame's definitely won.
Well, but they haven't had a national championship since, what, 93?
Notre Dame is still definitely won, though.
But why?
Because first off, they have played in the national title. They've got just absolutely ran off by Alabama.
So is Oregon.
But they are consistently there. And
Oregon played more national title games recently than Notre Dame? Like the last 25 years.
I'm just remembering one from each. So I'd have to go back and look at it.
All right.
But either way, I look at Notre Dame like a blue blood. Yeah, I do.
And
maybe it's more the history of it. Yeah, maybe that might be part of it. I'm not sure. But there might be just history attached to it. The fact that they have their own package on NBC where they have a whole slot of the day blocked out on NBC, not like a seventh streaming channel. Like there are layers to this. Oregon with Phil Knight in the next couple years will make Oregon a blue blood, though.
Josh and Burton, welcome to the show, buddy. What are your expectations for Ohio State in the rematch against Oregon?
Well, I hope they learn something from the Michigan game and don't turn themselves into a one-dimensional team, because I believe that Oregon's defensive line is or more talented than Michigan's defensive line was. So my hope is that they do not make themselves one-dimensional and allow Oregon to dictate what they're going to do on offense.
All right, Josh and Burton, we appreciate you.
Thank you, Josh.
I started off a little bit by the Oregon.
Yeah, I was too.
Yeah. Is that how, because I feel like I speak with pretty middle-of-the-road diction. Like, I don't think I sound like I'm from Ohio. I could be wrong on that. But I've never been told I sound like I'm from Ohio, even when I lived, like, in the South or when I've been outside. It's pretty, like, neutral diction is what I have.
I think that's a fair assessment
of
you.
Oregon, is that an Ohio thing? I mean, I've lived in Ohio my whole life.
We've heard it say Oregon a couple different ways now.
Mm.
Like, a couple different people have called in and said that. I always say, I'd say Oregon.
Oregon. Oregon. I don't know what you're showing me, Jax. I'm not good with phonetics.
Jax is just pointing a computer at him and like, oh, here, now do it.
Oregon says Oregon.
No, but where you're from definitely changes.
Yeah. I've just never heard like nationally when I hear people talk. Oregon. That sounds like a Boston thing. You going to Oregon, going down to the bar, and then going to Oregon. Now I'm really thrown off by this. I have no exit plan.
It's the Boston thing. They always screw everything up.
5 at 5, next on 92.3 The Fan.